Hey guys, Kyle Wheeler here. Welcome to Reflection. For today's clip episode or clipisode, I've got some clips from Mike, who I met while I was passing through Oregon. My cousin invited me over for a dinner with him and his wife and her uncle Mike. And Mike started to share some stories about his life doing drugs and then getting clean. And what really, really fascinated me was how his life doing drugs and his getting clean has enabled him to be in a position to help other people get clean. Anyways, here's the clips.
From all those party days.
Yeah.
Party days, huh?
Oh, yeah. Ever since the sixth grade, that's when it all went sour. I got caught for drinking at sixth grade.
On school grounds,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I tell you, I've talked to several homeless people, and I'm pretty sure I've heard some pretty crazy things by now. So there's not a whole lot that I'm thinking.
Yeah,
that's shocking.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Of course, it was wine that we ripped off from people's houses. I mean, $300 bottles of red wine and stuff like that.
It's kind of lost on you at that.
Yeah. Like, this stuff tastes like crap. Nowadays, or, you know, back when I used to drink, it would have been like, oh, this stuff's good now. You know? I went through that stage, you know, back in the 60s when, you know, when I was in grade school.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it went to everything, you know, smoking weed.
So did you grow up in Oregon as well?
I grew up in Portland.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. It was like, that was all the thing to do back then, you know. You know, freshman in high school, selling pink hearts and cross tops, and shopping bags of them, you know. buy the, you know, 10,000. Eating LSD all through high school, stuff like that. You know, I'd always have like 5 or 10 hits in my wallet in case I wanted to get high.
Gotcha.
Yep. Now I don't do any of that.
Mellowed out a little.
He just barely got baptized, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. In April 30th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about that journey,
Well, my wife was raised Mormon. And then, you know, she was baptized when she was 8. And then when she was 13, she left home.
Okay.
And she fell away and got in all sorts of, you know, lived the same way I did, I think. You know, we met in a drug house.
Okay.
Yeah. Did drugs for a few years together, and that was horrible. You know, basically, we treated each other like crap and, you know, did every kind of, you know, mental, physical, spiritual abuse that there is.
You know, I read a while back that we kind of, like, psychological terms that we overuse, and one of them was codependence. Mm-hmm. And the reason they said that's overused is initially it was coined to describe couples that did drugs with each other. That it was not just kind of like this emotional codependence, but like you had to get your fix with each other, and like you depended on each other for making those things happen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, we were into it big, definitely, you know, I made meth and all that stuff, you know, cooked it, and
wow.
I got busted for cooking meth.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I never been arrested until I was 45 years old.
Really?
Yeah, and then I got a felony for cooking meth.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, I pled guilty to that because they wanted to get me on possession, delivery, conspiracy, and manufacture, and so I said, okay, I'll plead guilty to the manufacturer, and he dropped the rest of the charges.
Wow.
Because he could get, you know, if I would have fought it, and I had a pretty good lawyer, and I probably could have fought it, but each charge carried a maximum fine of, you know, 10 years. So if I tried to fight it and I lost, they could give me, you know, real. So they could give me 40 years, you know, 10 years for each crime. So I said, yeah, I'll take, because I'd never been arrested, I'd take, you know, I'll plead guilty and, you know, pay an $800 fine and be on probation for 18 months.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the easier way for me to go. I was like, oh, I don't care if I got a felony, construction, everybody does, I think, anyway, this thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of amazing to me to, I was chatting with a guy in Eugene that was talking about the kind of the plea deal that he ended up with, and some people really end up with kind of a bum deal, I think, and because they don't understand what they're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have to do any jail time. I mean, they took me from the court when I got sentenced and said, okay, you're going to do 10 days in jail. And they took me from the court and took me out to Clackamas County Jail, and they fingerprinted me, took my picture, and said, see you later. You're too full.
Oh, really?
So I didn't even have to do any. I did more time in the drunk tank when I got arrested than I, you know, anything else. You know, I was in the first time for 12 hours, and then they let me out, and they said, okay, well, we're not going to charge you with anything. You know, we're going to no complaint here for now.
Okay.
And then about a year later, they came on Easter and grabbed me and took me back to jail. Yeah, you know, my lawyer had been talking to him, you know, and I talked to him 2 weeks before that. And, you know, they didn't say anything, and then they came.
Huh. And they show up 2 weeks later. Huh.
Yeah. Took me, and then I was in the drunk tank there for about another 12 hours before I got out, and they let me go. Yeah, so.
So. You had exposure to the church through your wife? Like, was there...
Well, yeah, after... Basically, when I met her, you know, both her older brothers, you know, they were in the church and all their kids were raised, you know, like her dad and her uncle, Wynn, and everything. So, yeah, I had exposure, you know, by going to the church, you know, like we'd go... I think I went to Will's baby christening. You know, when he was like, that was like 14 years ago or something like that, you know.
Okay.
And went to that. Hilda had gone to Alaska to get away from me. So I went to, and to church with her family, you know, and her brother and stuff. And, you know, and I felt the spirit there, you know. And I've been into lots of churches and stuff, you know, because I actually play violin and stuff. And so I'd play weddings and this and that. And I'd go to different churches and I really didn't feel a whole lot. But at Mormon church, I always felt the spirit.
Okay.
You know, so that got me, you know, to thinking, like, okay, well, you know, it's not by coincidence because I'd go back again, you know, and I'd feel it again, you know. And my wife had an out with the church and got really turned off, you know, when she was young. And
yeah.
And so we never really brought it up, you know, as far as going to church or anything. I never thought I'd ever go to church because I wasn't really raised religious at all.
Okay.
You know, and... You know, so we'd go to Utah and visit her brother and stuff, and we'd go to church there, you know, it was pretty nice that we really didn't ever talk about it, and then we went, some friends of ours got married in this church here, you know, we went to that, and at the reception, we sat down, you know, at the table with all the missionaries.
Okay.
And we were talking to all them, and you know, I mean, having a great old time and stuff. And
again, probably no coincidence there.
Yeah, well, we actually went down and sat at the table with them.
Okay, gotcha.
So
gotcha.
They were all sitting there, and we kind of like, hey, can we sit with you guys? You know, it's like, sure. Because Hilda's like, hey, here's the missionaries. We'll go bug them for a while. You know,
they're always up
yeah,
for it, right?
Yeah. So I don't know. I think about a week later or something. Being good missionaries like they are, one of them knocked on our door. Hey, what are you guys doing? You know, and can we come in? It's like, sure, come on in, you know. So we talked to them for a while. We invited them for dinner. They came over for dinner the next week. And then they said, well, how about next time we come over, we give you guys a lesson?
Okay.
And I said, sure, that'd be fine. And Bill's just like, okay. Because, well, actually, when we left the church that day, you know, after talking to the missionaries and stuff, you know, at that wedding, you know, we kind of looked at each other and went, you know, maybe we should try going to church. And, you know, she said that to me, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, because she would never bring it up before.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's like, so, you know, I guess over time and, you know, hanging around and that, you know, I guess the Spirit softened her heart, and that's where she was willing to try it, you know, because we saw, you know, with, you know, her brother, her dad and their family and her other brother and his family and stuff and the family atmosphere that it has, you know.
Yeah.
And I was brought up with, you know, I've got four brothers and stuff, you know, and we were pretty tight-knit family and stuff. And so, you know, being the good drug addicts that we were, we'd always just go get our drugs and leave, you know, and hide somewhere. So, you know, next Thursday I'll have 14 years clean. So it was kind of one of those things where it's like we had changed our lives and, you know, both of us were, you know, doing good for our spirituality and everything, you know, and so it kind of was like a natural progression, you know, to, you know, because in, like, in Narcotics Anonymous, you have to believe in a higher power, something that's loving and greater than yourself.
Yeah.
Well, and I was called a God, you know, I always knew there was a God, but I never was religious, you know.
Right.
So, you know, when she said that and we started going to church, you know, and we would see, you know, their family and her brother's family and stuff, and we'd go for, like, dinners and for over the holidays and stuff, and, you know, we'd leave and go, yeah, you know, that's, the family's the way it should be, you know, and... But, you know, we were so drugged up, we never thought about that, you know. So when I decided to get clean, I went to her Uncle Wynn, my wife's brother, older brother Wynn, and, you know, said, hey, I don't know what's going on. I said, but I'm a drug addict, and I'm going to get help, and I just need to be accountable to somebody, and I want to be accountable to you until I figure out what's going on. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. So I called him every day and let him know what was going on.
Yeah.
So again, I think it was 2 days later or something, I got into a drug treatment place.
Right on.
You know, and actually did it.
What drugs was like your go-to? I mean, you said cooked meth, but
yeah,
like, was there something?
Meth, anything. It was okay. Like anything you had and all of it.
Okay.
Pretty much. You know, I mean, since, you know, like seventh grade, I smoked pot every day.
Okay.
You know,
well, because
I went to school every day at high school on LSD.
Okay.
You know, and speed every day. And in construction, you know, you smoke pot, you know, like you smoke in the morning when you get up at 10 o'clock, at 12 o'clock, at 2 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, and, you know, all day long. And, you know, eat speed, you know, all sorts of stuff like that, you know, and anything and everything, heroin, whatever, you know. But I mean, the past, you know, years, it was pot, alcohol, and meth.
Okay.
You know, I was a big cokehead for a long time. I sold it all the time, you know. But meth is so much better because it's so much more for your money. You know, you can do $100 worth of coke in, you know, 20 minutes, and, you know, and 2 hours later, it's gone. You know,
right,
you're not worried
right.
about it. And $100 worth of meth will last you for 3 days, you know. And so it was, like, more economical. And,
yeah. The things to consider. Right?
Exactly. But, you know, I was always one of those people. I was never a thief. So I was always go to work. I mean, it didn't matter if I'd been up for 4 or 5 days. I would still go to work. You know, I'd be loaded off my ass.
Right.
But I'd be, you know, going to work and because I, you know, needed to have the money to buy my drugs. You know, I always had a place to live and had food and this and that for my kids, you know, and I was going through a divorce. And, you know, my oldest daughter, when I got busted, she wouldn't speak to me for a couple of years after that.
Really?
She said, I'd give you my life. You know, I was like, yeah, I can see that. You know, and we have a great relationship now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, and... Yeah, she saw me be clean for a long time, and I saw her following in her dad's footsteps. You know, she was a blackout drunk and really mean and stuff. And, you know, she'd been to meetings with us before, and, you know, I was just, you can't tell an addict they're an addict. You know, I know that from experience. So, you know, we just prayed that someday if she ever, you know, figured she needed some help, that she knew where to get it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
She texted me one morning at like 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and, Dad, I need help.
That's the moment.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, honey, I'll come up after I get off work. I'll come up to Portland. And I took an NA book and a meeting schedule, and I took her to a meeting and said, okay, that's all I can do for you, but I can do the rest with you. I can show you how to do it, but I can't do anything else for you. I took you to your first meeting and this and that. I said, it's up to you the rest of the time. You know, and so she's got over 4 years clean now.
Awesome.
Yeah. So right there, that was a blessing in itself, you know, because when it all boils down to it, you know, being a meth addict, you know, and you always hear voices, you know, they're just spinning through your head 100 miles an hour. You don't know which one to listen to. But I lived that one day, you know, I'd been on, I think, about a 4 or 5 day bender, and, you know, a voice in my head said, you need to do something different, or you won't be able to see your kids. You know, and so I went, wow, okay. And I listened to that voice in my head, and the very next day, you know, I went and got myself into a treatment, you know, and that's when I talked to Wynn and stuff. And you know, after a couple of weeks, I knew I needed to be where I was at for myself, not for my kids, you know, because I knew I had a problem.
Right.
And, you know, so I know that was God saving my life, you know. And the way I think I had, when we first bought this house, I think I had almost, I had about 5 years clean. And my daughter was living in Arizona, and I think she was, so she was 17 or 18. Okay. And she was living in Arizona, and she was a cutter, and she slit her wrist, you know, and her friend called, and I was like, okay, well, we had just bought this house, and we had a room upstairs and stuff, so it's like, all right, well, you can come live with us, you know, and I had a good job with insurance and everything, and got her mental health and all this stuff, and right then, that was saying, I'm glad I listened to that voice in my head, you know,
yeah.
Because, you know, I'm clean, I have a place to live, you know, it's stable, a good job, insurance and all this stuff, you know, where she could get some help, you know, and she lived with us for a while. My younger daughter, other daughter lived with us for a while, and then she went up to Portland, and you could see her starting to slip off into that same thing again, you know, drinking, and she never really did a whole lot of drugs, but she was really bad and drunk.
Okay.
You know, which alcohol is a drug, but,
yeah.
You know. So we just had to kind of sit back and watch, you know, hoping that she wasn't going to kill herself or, you know, get, you know, run over by a car or who knows what, you know.
Right.
But you never know when somebody's blackout drunk like that. I mean, I've still got pictures of my phone. She and my other daughter were living together, and Sarah called me up and said, "Dad, I can't handle this anymore." And she took some pictures and sent them to me on the phone of Annie's room, where she just went in there and destroyed the whole place, and there was glass on the floor, and she cut her feet, and there was blood all over the floor from her walking through it and stuff, and I didn't even remember doing it. You know, I've got those pictures on my phone to this day, you know, and it was a while after that, you know, that, you know, it was probably 6 months after that, 8 months after that, maybe, that she, you know, reached out for some help, and I was able to be there for her and show her the rooms, and that was another blessing right there, that
yeah.
You're doing it for, you know, what you're doing, you know, is the right reason to do it, you know, and my wife too, she, you know, when I decided to get clean, she was still using. So after about 2 weeks, I came home one day and said, "Pack your stuff." And she was like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, you're leaving." I said, "Because I'm clean and I'm serious about it, and you're using, and people's places and things have to go. So you need to go pack your stuff." And she's like, and I took her over to the drug dealer's house and said, "Here you go." Yeah,
your problem now.
Yep, here you go. You can have her. I'm not doing this anymore. You know.
So, just that one time of trying. Like, did you try to get clean before? Or
never.
Really?
Yeah, I never thought. You know, I didn't ever think I had a problem. People say, "You have a problem with drugs," and I say, "No, I don't. I love doing drugs. I don't have a problem with it. I never lost a job. I always go to work. My kids have food. I have a place to live. I pay my bills. Tell me that I got a problem."
Huh.
You know, so I mean, the way that I was a drug addict, you know, and a functioning addict kept me out there for a long time.
Gotcha.
Because I didn't think I had a problem.
That's amazing, though, to just
I've never
decided to get clean.
That's
yeah. That.
Yeah. So.
Huh.
Yeah, so and then after about a month,
that's how it's gonna be.
Yeah. After about a month, you know, I called Hilda and said, "Hey, I'm going to a meeting before I get this right, the day before Thanksgiving," and that same weekend. I said, I'm going to go to a meeting tonight. You want to go with me?" And she goes, "Well, I don't know. Give me 10 minutes. I'll call you back." You know, she called me back in about 10 minutes. She's like, "Yeah, I'll go with you." And so evidently she called a drug deal and couldn't get a hold of her, so she's going to go to a meeting with me. you know, so I took her to a meeting and then took her home, and then I went up to Seattle because I got family that lives up there and stuff, and she proceeded to try and get loaded that night, and, you know, was just all tore up and everything, and the next day was the day she got clean.
Wow.
You know, and so after that, after about 2 weeks of watching her, and I said, "If you're serious about this, you can move back in," you know, and so she moved back in, and I think when I had 9 months clean, a friend of my brother's, who's an architect down in San Diego, wanted some work done at his house, and so I went down there.
Okay.
You know, to just do some work for maybe a month or two or something, and ended up staying off and on for 18 months, you know, and, you know, I would come home every 5 weeks. I'd come home for a week, and, you know, she was taking care of my younger daughter and stuff when, you know, because I had her every other week,
okay.
You know, and so, you know, she was taking care of her, you know, my ex-wife was allowing it and stuff, you know, because she was fed up with everything, you know, and when I moved back, you know, it was good because I was able to work on myself and she was able to work on herself, you know, in recovery and find out who we were or whatnot. And so, yeah, when I moved back, it was kind of one of those things where, well, we didn't, you know, we waited for almost 3 years, being clean for 3 years before we got married because I didn't know who I was. I didn't know if I'd even like her when she was clean.
Like, totally different people.
Yeah, yeah, totally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It was a good opportunity for me to find out who I was, you know, because, you know, I started doing drugs in sixth grade.
Yeah.
You know, and they tell you once you start doing drugs, basically you stop maturing, you know, so it's like, wow, you know. So let's see, how old am I now? yeah, let's see, how old are you? And you're 12 years old in the sixth grade or something, so yeah, I'm about 26 now. But you know, and then on top of that, so, you know, she got clean and then, you know, my daughter got clean and a couple months later, my ex-wife, you know, got sober.
Wow.
You know, which is all a trickle-down effect from me getting straight.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Music this episode by Andy G. Cohen, songs from the album Through the Lens. To get more information on where to find Andy Cohen's music or on the licensing information, just look us up on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com. Look up Reflection Podcast. The episode notes will have more information. Thanks for listening.